Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of the show, recognize that they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is the show Part Sinner, Part Saint, and it is part of Late Night Poets After Midnight. Late Night Poets is a group on allpoetry.com, and you can follow along in the chat in that group. You can talk with us, you can read along, and you can enter our contest to be on the show. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are. And tonight I will be joined by, oh, here she is.
Hello.
Dabbler, is that you?
Yeah, it is.
Welcome. Perfect timing.
Now is the perfect time to update. I'm like, let's call the show. Oh, okay, we're not.
It honestly worked out, like, perfectly when you joined, though, because I'm like, Babbler will be, and there she is.
Oh.
bad. I got some new meds for my vertigo, which make me, like, super drowsy, because they're like, oh, you're going to want to lay down. I'm like, I always want to lay down. What are you talking about? Oh. it's basically I've been tranquilized. Okay, I see what you mean. it was kind of a fun week. I got to do the Winter Carnival in my city doing outreach for my library. So I did story walks, which is basically you break down the book into panels. And they kind of look like the little, like, real estate or election signs, but you have, like, a page on each sign, and you have to run around and get to all the different pages and read the story. And it's just really fun to do with the little kids, because in the snow we got to, like, pull sleds. So they got to, like, ride their little sled to the next page. It was really cute.
Nice. That sounds like fun.
How was your week? It was. And there were fire dancers, which was awesome.
Well, nice. Mostly I worked. Didn't do a whole lot. One of my favorite bands released a new song, and they pulled a hook from another favorite song of mine, so I got, like, really overly excited about that last night. That's about it.
Listen to it about 500 times.
Yeah. Like, everybody that I knew that would listen. And I'm like, they took the guitar off from this other song. They took the guitar off.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love the enthusiasm.
Other than that, though, I've really just been working, so. Not the doubles, which is good, but still probably more than I should be.
Yes. We need to get some work-life balance for you, lady.
Yeah, I mostly just work. Sorry.
I lecture you, but then tomorrow is technically my day off, but I'm going to do a little bit of work. But it's the slacker kind of work because, again, it's Winter Carnival, so I'm like, well, you know, yes. I have to be there, and I'm doing stuff, but it's also kind of fun, so. It's all right.
Voluntary work, kind of. You get paid to do something you like. That's always good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Actually, tomorrow I don't get paid, but still.
My job. So then I'm, like, the top of the ladder, so I get to manage people's egos most of the time.
Yeah, I don't love that. I'm second at the top, so if my boss is out of town, then that's me, and I don't love it, so I do not envy you.
Yeah, I mostly just listen to people complain for a long time while trying to get work done, and then be like, oh, you know, okay, well, we'll see what we can do about that, but it's really nothing you can do anything about, because it's like you're just complaining about another person. And it's just interpersonal goodness.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that kind of people thing. Will find a way to complain about something. There's always a way.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me the things that people come to the information desk at the library for. Like, they'll have, like, a stack of handwritten notes, and they're like, I need you to type this for me. I'm like, who do you, like, what do you think I am? Like, you know, like, to get a passport, you have to have a recommendation by someone who is in a position of, I don't know what you would consider it, like, a professional kind of position. So one of the things on the list is librarian. But the thing is, when they're saying that, like, you have to have a reference, it means, like, the person knows you. Like, it's not supposed to be, like, you go to the library and you're like, okay, I need you to recommend me for this passport. No, I don't know who you are. That's not how it works. I don't know your identity. It's just, I don't know. It's been one of those weeks where I'm just like, really? No.
Yeah, services you do not provide. Yeah, I love it when people come to me and ask me to do their job, and I'm like, that's your job, actually. Anyway, the work week is over, so, for me anyway. You work tomorrow, but it doesn't sound like hard work.
No, it's a fun Monday. It's only like partial work, really. I have to make an appearance. I have to be, you know, somewhat professional. But also, my version of professional is like be silly with the kids. So it's all good.
No swearing.
That's how I am anyway.
No. No swearing. Appropriate attire. You're good.
Yeah. And it's cold enough that, like, really, I'm going to be bundled anyway. It's not like I would ever be inappropriate in, like, the snow. I mean, I guess I could have, like, terrible slogans on a hoodie or something, but I wouldn't. tell us about your contest.
So the contest I put together for this week is about, it's called The Breakdown, and it's kind of about breakdowns. So I just wanted to explore mental breakdowns and kind of put a little bit of a literary spin on it. You know, I know a lot of people here on All Poetry have struggled in some way or another with a breakdown, you know, whether it's something small, like just sobbing in the shower and you kind of can piece yourself back together, or one of those more major kind of breakdowns where you never really feel whole again. And I just kind of wanted to give a platform kind of explore that and talk about it, but, you know, it's inspired by some literary quotes. So I provided a few quotes. I believe there were six that people could pull from for inspiration.
Yes, that would be great.
So the first quote was, "All reality about me now appeared to be in tatters, taken down and reduced to the civil war of its particles. I held on very, very tight indeed. Because in addition to that feeling, that disintegration, there was rage. I wanted to break something." Sebastian Fox from Ingleby. The second quote was, "And I knew for sure, with an absolute certainty, that this is rock bottom. This is what the worst possible thing feels like. It is not some grand, wretched, emotional breakdown. It is, in fact, so very mundane. Rock bottom is an inability to cope with the commonplace that is so extreme it makes even the grandest and loveliest things unbearable. Rock bottom is feeling that the only thing that matters in all of life is the one bad moment. Rock bottom is everything out of focus, failure of vision, a failure to see the world how it is, to see the good in what it is, and only to wonder why the hell things look the way they do and not some other way." Elizabeth Wurtzel from Prozac Nation. The third quote is, "Instead of heading for a big mental breakdown, I decided to have a small breakdown every Tuesday evening." That's from Graham Park, No Hope for Gomez. Number four is, "She grabbed all her clothes from her wardrobe and flung them across the room, screaming her head off until she finally felt sane again. Perhaps tomorrow she would buy those cats." Cecilia Ahern, "Yes, I Love You, Breaking, You're Not Really Living," by Richie Norton. And quote six is, "Live boldly and rejoice in work is a worthy mantra for enduring a life that will ultimately break the fibrous soul." It's from Kilroy J. Olster from Dead Toad Scrolls. So those were the prompts for this evening's writing. Looking forward to see what we
Excellent.
Got.
Well, I think I'm going to try to go in order of what prompts people chose. So I'm going to start with Externally Internal by G.A. Grimm. And here we go. Eternally Internal by G.A. Grimm. I curse these thoughts that stampede across my mind, wildly galloping, froth of mouth, never to be corralled or controlled, a white-knuckled ride to be endured yet again. Oh, how it twists tight and keeps hold of my dignity, squeezing out all things decent, leaving only an incandescence which blinds, blotting out all else, saving an impotent seething thought, fear not, though fear not you, this battle forever stays within, never to be witnessed by another, for the ground given or retaken cannot be measured by those who have no fight. End poem.
Great read of Feziana. And I really like this write, T.A. Grimm. You know, as the title says, eternally internal, talking about that internal war that so many people can't see. I love the kind of ferocity that's given using the verbs in that first stanza, you know, the stampede and galloping, froth of mouth, white-knuckled. You know, the word choices and adjectives there were just, I think, really well done. They really kind of give it, like, an intensity to the struggle, you know, to what racing thoughts feel like, the way you can't rein them in. There's no stopping it when it starts. It's not quite true, but it's really difficult. And how so many people don't see it, and how so many people don't think that if they don't see you struggle, that you don't. Yeah, which is kind of sad. But I really also enjoyed you know, the last bit of that stanza. You know, the ground given or retaken cannot be measured by those who have no fight. The people who haven't been there don't understand. They don't see it, or they relate it. You know, they try to be empathic about it. They try to relate to their own experience, you know, when it's like, oh, I'm really depressed. And they're like, oh, yeah, I'm having a really bad day, too. And it's not really like a blame game or like, you know, my day is worse than yours. It doesn't need to be like a contest. But just when you speak to someone like that, you can really tell they don't get it. You know, so I'm like, I'm not talking about a bad day. I'm talking about, like, I have to decide at some point here when I climb out of this hole whether to just cut all of my hair off or spend, like, 4 hours combing it because I haven't taken care of it for the last 2 weeks because I've had no energy. Like, literally not at all. And that maybe is a little more visible, but you're not typically inviting people over when you're going through that. So I like the way this expresses that mindset, the way racing thoughts work and how people don't always see it because it's not an external thing. You know, I've had panic attacks and racing thoughts while sitting at my desk, and I'm sure to most people it looks like I'm just working, but I'm actually just sitting there trying not to lose my shit. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done about the internalization of and desperation. Great, right? What did you think of Feziana?
Well, first of all, I want to respond to some of what you said. I totally agree that, you know, people try to be empathetic, but they misunderstand that, like, depression is the same as sad, which it's not at all, and that anxiety is that I was trying to explain how I have these anxiety attacks, and someone was like, oh, yeah, sometimes, like, if I'm at the cash register, I'm a little nervous. I might not quite have enough change. And I'm like, no, I think I'm dying. Like, it's a different experience. I also have those little nervous moments, but there's a big difference between having an anxiety disorder and feeling a little bit anxious. And sometimes it's hard for people to get that. So I feel like this right, you can tell that he gets that it's a deeper thing. I like that he says, there's a thought, stampede across my mind, because it is like a stampede when there's so many of them that, you know, even if it was not that big of a thought to start with, that one thought, because they all overwhelm at the same time, it's bad. It makes me think of, like, you know, the wildebeest in The Lion King when, you know, one's coming down and that doesn't seem so bad. And then there are so many of them that it just, like, even if you're the most ferocious lion, you're going to get squashed. And that's what those thoughts can be like. So I think stampede was the first perfect word choice right there. And the white-knuckled ride where you're just holding on so tight. And the I like that he brings dignity into it and keeps hold of my dignity, because it can feel like you're losing that in those moments. Where is the other part that I wanted to talk about? Cannot be, for the ground given or taken cannot be measured by those who have no fight. It is a really hard thing to measure your progress or how far your breakdown has gone. It's one of those things where you can't easily do it. I was filling out a disability form at one point, and they are so, like, based on physical disability. It's like, and how much have you improved in the last 3 months?
Yeah.
And I'm like, how do you say that? It's like, wow, I haven't, you know, spent my entire month in bed or crying in the shower. So, you know, I went outside. Woohoo. It's just like, how do you measure that? And how do doctors measure it? It's really difficult. So I really like that he said cannot be measured, because that is such a difficult thing, is to explain how bad it is or how much better you've gotten. It's really hard to show, and it's hard to know for yourself. So I think that was just really insightful way of putting it, and I really appreciate this poem.
Yeah, I agree. And I like what you said, too, because I've filled out those forms, and it's like they don't make any sense when you're talking about a mental health problem. Yeah, how can you improve? Well, I'm not currently depressed. I mean, I made it to the doctor's office. But this is cyclical, so in a couple of weeks, you know,
right?
It doesn't really work like that. There's no healing, you know. What kind of assistance do you need around your home? Well, when I'm really depressed, I need someone to do, like, everything. But it's not because I can't physically do it, but I can't mentally do it, what you're asking. I relate. They are not geared towards mental health at all. So I thought that was an excellent point. Where are we off to next?
We have one by Martha Gettle, and I have a SoundCloud for this one. So find that recording. Here we go.
Am I Crazy by Martha Gettle. Am I going crazy? Am I falling apart? Or am I just reeling from a broken heart? Is my heart, is it racing fast? Is it the future or the past? Tell me, can you see what's happening to me? Am I losing my mind? Or is he still mine? Did he tell me he was leaving someone else he'd be pleasing? Has my world fallen apart? Did he just break my heart? Tell me he didn't walk out the door, promising he'd not be back anymore. I know I had a nightmare, it can't be true. Leaving me is something he'd never do. Did he tell me he was leaving someone else he'd be pleasing? Has my world fallen apart? Did he just break my heart? Tell me, am I crazy? Or did he just leave? Will he come back again? Or did he tell me this is the end?
SoundCloud from Martha. Really appreciate SoundCloud. Helps us hear the poem, or in this case, song, in the way that it was meant to be heard. So always appreciative of that. You know, this takes a completely different tack of the last one, where this one comes at it from the perspective of heartbreak. You know, it doesn't have to be a mental illness that causes a breakdown. Sometimes it can be a traumatic event. Like this kind of gets at, you know, being left by someone that you care about, that you just completely blindsided by a loss. Something I appreciate about Martha's work here is that it's always pretty direct, but she doesn't really skirt the issue. She just kind of, like, jabs her finger right into it, you know, which I think makes it more approachable for a wider audience. But I really enjoyed this, you know. Just kind of feel the heartbreak in it and the pain, you know. Just a different kind of broken, you know. It's almost like an abandonment. I haven't gone through a whole lot of that. I think I had one kind of hard breakup in my life that was this kind of emotional. And you can feel kind of crazy. Like, you feel kind of ridiculous, or at least I did in my case, for getting so upset about losing someone, you know? Like, I should be able to function, but I can't, and then it's just kind of ridiculous that I can't because there's nothing, you know, like, every little thing would remind me of them, even if it wouldn't normally, just because I felt like the rug was pulled out from under me, so. And that way I find this very relatable, so thank you, Martha. What did you think of Faziana?
I think she has a really nice structure to it. You know, even without hearing it, you can tell that it's a song, the way that it's put together, the way it rhymes, and the way that the stanzas are spaced out, with some shorter and others longer, and the way that the chorus fits in. I think that this kind of delves into that world of sometimes things that go wrong can also instigate a mental illness that was under the surface. It can be a trigger or a stressor where if you were already a little bit unstable, then when you lose someone, it sets you off. But also sometimes in these situations, it just feels like you're losing yourself, because it sometimes, like she says, she would rather it be that she's going crazy and imagining it than if he was actually gone. So it's an interesting perspective. I think that she did a good job putting it together like a song, and I'm happy that she always does a SoundCloud. I appreciate when people take the time to do that so we can hear it in their own voice. This is well done. It's a different kind of breakdown, but I think that it's an important contribution.
I like the point you made about underlying mental health conditions. You know, I hadn't really thought about it in that context, but I like that. I also like the note that you made about it being, you almost wish you were crazy, you know, because then at least it'd be something real. Not that grief isn't real, but like I said, you can feel kind of ridiculous about it. Like, there can be a sense of self-judgment, you know. I think it's hard sometimes to remember that no feelings are bad. You know, there's negative feelings and there's positive feelings, but no feelings are bad. They're all just feelings, and they're all equally valid. And it's one thing to say that, but it's another thing to, like, feel it when you're in, the doldrums of grief. I thought that was an excellent point.
It's true. It's hard not to get stuck on that, because I've always felt guilty when I'm angry or I'm sad, like I'm failing somehow by not being happy. But, you know, there is a full range of feelings we have to let ourselves have. And the thing that got me thinking about the stressors was I've been watching a lot of Criminal Minds and shows like that, and usually it's like they're like, okay, so before he was a little bit disturbed, but now this happened. There must have been some kind of stressor, and then you find out, like, there was a breakup, or it's always something like that, and they're like, and then he killed everyone. Not to say that Martha would, but there's always that moment of, like, aha, there was a stressor. Okay. Sorry, I got off track there. I'm going to do mine because also... Right? Sometimes we have to leave the path. I'm going to do mine because it's to the first prompt. Disintegration. Cognitive behavioral and EMDR were sewing machines. They stitched together my mismatched bloody mind scraps, scrunching highs and lows to tight seams of in-betweens. Pills patched bright light in the darkest of gaps. A team of therapists supplied the needles and thread to embroider a smile on and color over the dread. Waterproof mascara never withstands true tears, and skin glue needs a straight edge that adheres. The fabric of my psyche should have been washed on delicate. Treated roughly, the chemical reaction requires a suit of hazmat. The shitstorm of life's disappointments strikes as acid rain. The threads binding my wits dissolve until none remain. Integrated was a happy diagnosis a decade past. Now patchwork brain unravels, disintegrated in the blast. End poem.
I really liked this Rhizotheca. I just liked how it kind of, to me, gives a nod to quilting without just saying quilting. like almost like a patchwork or a rag quilt, kind of, which I really enjoyed, you know, just with all the bright and the light and the dark and just all the little scraps. I thought was great. And using that metaphor to be, you know, a team of therapists supplies the needles and thread, which sounds like a really positive thing, you know. And it is, you know, they're tools. You can use them how you'd like. But then to say to embroider a smile on, you know, which feels so fake and so forced. You know, it's the pretending everything's okay. Like, oh, I have the tools to function at a minimum that society requires for me to be considered valid to the public. So I'm okay now, is kind of what it says to me, which is, you know, so far from the truth. You know, I have a lot that goes on with me, but I've never been fired, you know. In some people's mind, that means I'm fine. You know, so I enjoyed that. I also love the waterproof mascara never withstands true tears. This is so true. I don't care how much waterproof they say that mascara is. Crying, it is on your face. I just kind of like that because I thought it really gave good imagery. It almost made me think of, like, a Raggedy Ann doll because, you know, how they give them those big, thick, like, black embroidery eyelashes, you know, like little sticks with, like, three on the top, three on the bottom. It kind of looks like smudged mascara. That's kind of where my mind went with that, so I really enjoyed that. And then in their next answer, where you say, the fabric of my psyche should have been washed on delicate, I enjoyed that. It's almost like the sexy part of your brain, like almost like a negligee or something intimate, which I enjoyed. It just is like the lingerie of somebody's mind. I just enjoyed the thought. You know, and then to go into more serious things, you know, the chemical reaction and needing a hazmat, like it's that powerful. And then the shitstorm of life's disappointment strikes us acid rain. To do a shitstorm and then make it acid rain just makes me think of, like, particularly nasty diarrhea, like, falling from the sky, which is quite an image. I think this is a very visually active piece. Particularly enjoyable for me. It was just like, ew. But I think it works so well that these three examples of this piece in this one stanza are still like diametrically opposed. You know, something really delicate, something really corrosive, and something really gross. Just really kind of bring it back to that kind of patchwork, mismatched kind of theme that you have going on. So I really like that. You know, and then your last two lines, you know, integrated was a happy diagnosis a decade past, you know. It's weird how medical terminology so quickly becomes outdated because stigmas seem to chase it. like wildfire. You know, one a word can mean one thing and have a good connotation, and then as like the biases of society and even the medical world kind of catch up to it, it becomes stigmatized and means something else, which I find fascinating. But, you know, like the positive feeling of having like a proper diagnosis kind of sinks in when you realize it doesn't solve the problem, it just puts a name on it. You know, like, oh great, my jar of shit has a label that says shit. It doesn't help the situation. It just points it out. So, I don't know, I really liked it. I thought it was a great piece. I think structurally here, I think you have a sonnet.
Well, I didn't use iambic pentameter, so it doesn't count as a sonnet,
no.
But I wish I was good at that.
Well, there's the sonnet that has actual iambic pentameter, and then there's the more modern sonnets that don't. I don't remember the exact name for it. Blank, a blank verse sonnet. I forget what it is. There's a name for it, but I'm not that well-versed in technical terms for poetry, but there are different forms of sonnet. I know there's a blank verse sonnet, which I think doesn't even rhyme, and then there's another one that doesn't have meter, and then there's the more formal tradition, like traditional Shakespearean sonnet. The names aren't coming to me at the moment. So, anyway.
Oh, I think you're right.
I think it's some form.
I've never been able to get the meter. But I really appreciate your interpretation. I love everything that you said, so thank you so much.
Good. Anything you wanted to add?
No, I think you summed it up nicely. There's a poem by Colap on the board, if you can read that for us. That's for prompt two.
Absolutely. I somehow wandered away from the board, so let me get back there real quick. All right. This is Rock Bottom, Colab. Juliet spoke about her best friend hitting rock bottom. She chuckled about how can this girl be so weak as to fall apart over a man. Then Julia's eyes got rounder and pointed their index to her face, saying, can anyone can hit rock bottom, even you. Was as she gave her the permission, and after that one incident, she herself pressed the red button. For no particular reason, he gave her the cold shoulders and wouldn't talk. Sharing the same bed, the same room, they were more or less inmates, sharing the same cell, where they both volunteered to be part of this experience. He less so than her, since he was part of the Ruiz family. It was this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to do the right thing, fight for what you believe in, much like Hemingway volunteering to be an ambulance driver for the Spanish Civil War kind of thing. Except this was a government in exile representing Cambodia based in Bangkok, and she found myself sucked 3 centuries back machinations and intrigue, the westernized American educated girl volunteering to work for her king. He fell into her arms as they became comrade in political arms, but this time it was just too much for her to take. Unequipped with social codes, rebel at heart, she found herself being nicknamed the Pashtunaria, or the Khmer Rouge, as she couldn't help displaying her care for the people for whom they were supposed to be laboring for, those 375,000 people living in the Thai refugee camp. It was a Friday night when she couldn't afford to house such dramas during the weekdays as they had so much work to do. She shouted at him to get a reaction, but still he didn't budge nor said a word. So, remembering the seppuku knife he had given to her, the one that the king of Japan had given to him during his official visit to that country, such gifts were bestowed only among kings, and her lover just happens to be the grandson of their king. To grab it, and called his name as she stabbed herself once, looking right at him. Are you mad? He finally spoke. Satisfied with the reaction and just make the final point, she stabbed herself again, mimicking the act, except the second time the blade really went into her flesh, and she hadn't even noticed it. look what you've done to yourself. When she saw the look of horror in his eyes, she bent her head to look down and found her stomach bleeding. Fed on Mishima's novels and his penchant for seppuku and his final exit from his ghost world of lost samurais and her own sense of drama, she can hear Madame Butterfly singing Un bel de Vitremo as the latter waits for Pinkerton, or in this case the ambulance, taking her to the emergency room. During the ride at the last, perhaps she shouldn't have taken Julia's words too seriously. End point. I really enjoyed this. This was almost a little essay, but the interweaving of fantasy and history and modernity is just absolutely fascinating to me. And it works so well with the idea of losing your mind. You know, to go from a girl's night, like talking with your friend about relationship problems, to basically like a crack in time almost, to place, you know, the relationship struggles and the battle of a relationship that isn't working out, contents of like Pol Pot era Khmer Rouge Cambodia, you know, and the horrors and atrocities that went there and that kind of struggle, and then also to tie it into like the context of seppuku and Japanese like self-sacrifice, you know, the violence that it takes on, and just kind of tying together all of these different concepts and situations and contexts. It's almost, you know, being within the mind of someone who is losing their grasp on reality, because it just tosses you from one place to the next. And to just go be like, oh, I got permission to hit rock bottom, let's do this, you know, and then to have a fight with a spouse, and then the next thing, find yourself in the Spanish Civil War, comparing yourself to Hemingway, and then to flash from that to being a volunteer in, Bangkok, helping 375,000 Cambodian refugees to, committing seppuku in your living room with an antique sword. You know, it goes from, like, one thing to the next. You're not really sure what time frame or time zone or area you're in until the very end when she has stabbed herself and is en route to the hospital. I think it's really immersive. It's an immersive piece, and it also has so many pieces of history and stories. There's also like lessons tucked in here. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really great. It was such a fantastic interpretation of that second quote, you know, about the mundane becoming fantastic in the extreme. Like, you can't appreciate your current situation because everything seems fantastic in its boringness, and just that loss of the sense of reality. I thought this was absolutely fantastic, right? So thank you, Colette. What did you think of Iziana?
I loved it. I think when you said it was immersive, that was the key word. It really is. You get lost in these different time periods, and it's just like, it's almost confusing because it jumps around, but at the same time, it's like so vivid that you're right in that with her feeling the confusion, which is just such an interesting way of explaining that kind of mental breakdown. And I think this could be a novel. Like, it could be expanded where she goes through the different time periods and the different situations where she's going through these struggles. I love it. I really think she could expand on it. It's so wonderful. I really liked the part where she's nicknamed Passionaria because she couldn't help displaying her care for the people. I love that, Passionaria. Like, it's almost like they're saying it's a bad thing, but it's actually quite wonderful. I would love to be nicknamed the Passionaria. I think that's so cool. Where is it now? The part at the end where she stabs herself, I like that she doesn't realize it because she's in shock. So she stabs herself, and she doesn't really clue in that it really went in until she sees, like, his reaction to it. And then there's that shock. I could picture that. I could so vividly imagine that I was the woman and I saw the man's reaction, that I looked down and there was the blood. She really brought this to life. Again, goes back to immersive. It really was. I felt that. Really impressive piece.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. There's so many references and tie-ins. It's like a multiple piece history lesson braided in with the idea of losing one's sanity. I just thought it was great. Excellent. What's up next?
Now, for prompt 3, we have The Scream by Incubus 2. The Scream by Incubus 2. Scream! I'm not listening. I have heard it all before. I will not lock the windows to my soul anymore. Too many walls erected, too many doors without a key. So scream, because I'm not listening. I'm setting myself free. I've realized my madness is just a part of me I've hid, like a shadow or a birthmark, but I'm not some mixed-up kid. You broke me into pieces, shattered my mind like it was glass, but no more am I fine porcelain. I've learned now the screams will pass. So scream. Scream louder. Scream as loud as you dare, because I'm not really listening, because you're not really there. End poem.
Ah, great read. I enjoyed this piece and the way it develops. I think it's really fun. There's a lightheartedness almost to the way the cadence and the rhyme are on this. It gives it a almost sing-songy but kind of eerie vibe to it. Because it feels like playful, but almost like alluring playful, which I found fascinating. I love that it just starts with scream, you know, I'm not listening, I've heard it all before, which, you know, I've felt that way, but not in this quite context. But when I was reading it the first time, without knowing how it ends, you know, I was thinking about when people try to explain away my feelings. Or, you know, for a long time I had a really hard time, still do in some ways, when being honest with myself, going to the doctor about my problems, because I go and I get the same diagnosis and they put me on the same medication and it still doesn't work, and then I go back and, you know, they just basically try a different medication that's very similar to the last one I took, and it's just very cyclical. And then, like, every time I move, I have to start the whole process over again, you know? And it's just tiring. Like, it's the repetitiveness of that is so tiring that I have felt like just screaming, because I'm just like, can we, you know, I'd really like to stop starting over at the beginning before I solve the problem. That'd be great. You know, and then too many walls erected, too many doors without a key. I'm screaming because I'm not listening. I'm setting myself free. You know, it's the idea of letting it all out, relieving the pressure, which I can relate to. I don't think I've ever just gone outside and screamed, but I imagine it'd be really cathartic. I guess part of the reason I don't do that is because that was my mom's coping mechanism sometimes. So for me, it's just kind of disturbing. But I imagine it could be really relieving in the right places, you know. And then to get to that end and realize that it's not so much about the narrator screaming, as it is a screaming in their mind, you know, almost like an alternate personality or a fraction of self, as they realize that it's okay because they can rationalize that it's not real. You know, this is a figment of their imagination or something that's not actually happening. You know, which is, you know, maybe schizophrenia or dissociative identity disorder, or maybe even something like just dissociation, you know, or maybe the narrator, like, is really screaming, but it doesn't feel like them. You know, there's so many interpretations of that that are really kind of introduced in that last stanza that really adds a twist to it. I also find it interesting that it seems like in the context of this poem that the scream is really freeing. You know, it's not really put too much in a negative context. You know, scream, I'm not listening, like, it's not really bothersome. And then it's, you know, then it becomes cathartic. And then it's, you know, the scream is going to pass, but go ahead and scream. Just go for it. Just go. I found it interesting. I enjoyed this write. I thought it was really fascinating. It took some twists and turns, and then it had a kind of unexpected, or maybe a better word is enlightening ending. But I enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you, us too, for the write. Enjoyed it. Fabiana, your thoughts?
I enjoyed it as well. It was a pleasure to read. Like, it just kind of flowed, and it just had such an interesting structure to it. The rhyme scheme worked really well. I like when it says, I've realized my madness is just a part of me I've hid, like a shadow or a birthmark, but I'm not some mixed-up kid. That madness is just in them. It's a part of everything. It's not like a piece that can be cut off. Sometimes it's just part of who you are. And I thought that was really interesting, the way that put together. But no more am I fine porcelain. I really liked that too. Feeling like you're really breakable, or being treated like you're breakable is something that can really happen with mental illness. It's like, you know, people are walking on eggshells trying to not disrupt you, but it ends up being, like, worse because you feel like you're, like, put off to the side as this porcelain doll that doesn't actually get to experience anything. And I liked the ending, the way that it, the spacing is kind of, how do I say this? The lines get shorter, but it's centered there when previously it had been left aligned. So it's like funneling down. It kind of reminds me of like when your vision is closing in a tunnel kind of thing, if you're passing out, kind of, because I'm not really listening because you're not really there. And that part did make me think of schizophrenia, that the voices were coming just from in the head. And it made me think that he's trying to free himself from the screaming, not by screaming, that he's tuning out the screaming that normally would upset him, and he's realizing, like, that's not real. I'm not even going to respond to it. It's a complex subject and so complex poem, but it did have that lightness to it in the way that it flowed, so that made it palatable. It's a really enjoyable piece, and I think that it had a lot of depth.
Yeah, I found it very textured as well. Thought it was well done. And so layered, you know, just like almost like a learning of coping mechanisms, like the different stages of understanding of the screaming. Oh, that was a great write. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Where are we going now?
Don't think anyone wrote to prompt 4. So I guess I will go to prompt 5. Here we go. There's one by Stephen T. Wellman, if you'll read that one for us.
Absolutely. This is Blind by Stephen T. Wellman. I hold it in well, or so I think. It will never happen. I'm strong, a man of unwavering faith. But who am I kidding? I'm a cracked clay jar, an earthly vessel, a muddy, melancholy misfit. I am the key trying to open hardened human hearts. I feel too much. I've seen too much. Too much hate, disruptive demons destroying, rotting the container in which it is held. Too much pain. The only thing real. The only thing we can truly call our own. Too much greed. Never enough money to satisfy the thirst for more. Too much power, but never enough to change the world. Is it a crime to love people, to love humanity, set on hurting one another? Haven't we hurt ourselves enough? We were made to love, to be loved. We are doors others can walk through, bully and mock one another. I find it shocking we accept lies as truth and truth as lies. My soul cries out. I told myself I wouldn't break, but the dam is breaking. Trace my tears to a restless ocean, waves of emotion within, yet the pool of humanity, shallow, weeping ensues. I don't understand why a grown man will cry when simple acts of kindness would kill all this blindness. End poem. I really enjoyed the piece. I loved that opening stanza, I hold it in well, or so I think. It will never happen. I'm strong, a man of unwavering faith. But who am I kidding? It's not strong to not feel, but society really sets it up to be that way. Crying in public or in front of people is so often seen as a sign of weakness, and it's really not. But it's just societally unacceptable for some reason. I do think that it's kind of starting to change culturally, which I think is a good thing. But, it's a very relatable mindset, to be like, I'm not showing my pain, so I'm good, I'm strong. But that's, that's got its own pitfalls, modeling things up, which I think is reflected well in the next stanza. And I really love this next stanza. I'm a cracked clay jar, earthly vessel, the muddy, melancholy misfit. I love the alliteration there, but just the visual painted by being a cracked jar, and how that is an earthly vessel and kind of representative of our body, like the imperfect means of our physicality, which I really liked. The muddy, melancholy misfit. I just picture kind of something a little bit misshapen but still useful. I really liked just the visual imagery, and I liked the word choices. And I even liked just the way it rolled off the top. I'm the key trying to open the hardened human hearts. She's trying to make other people feel, trying to make other people more empathetic, which is a really pretty noble pursuit in my opinion, to try to make others more open. Difficult, by the way, if not straight up impossible, but still worthy of the attempt, I think. But this person also, the narrator here, seems really empathetic, kind of damaged and taking on all of the negativity of the world that they witness. Pain and, disruptive demons just trying to rot in the container, which has helped, made me think of, back to the clay jar and the vessel, and that, mental health can kind of erode you. Especially the line when too much pain, the only thing real, the only thing we can truly call our own. It's such a dark thought, but it kind of brings me back to my own kind of mindset, because obviously I see things through my personal lens. Associative, and I don't have a lot of feeling, which I haven't had it for a long time, thank goodness. But back when I was a teenager, I would dab my legs and stuff because the pain felt real and nothing else did. Not healthy, by the way. If you're going through that, please talk to somebody. I relate to that on a real level, where the hurt feels like a hurt. And sometimes it feels like the only thing you feel, whether physical or mental. They kind of parallel each other in that way. And then to continue to work through, like, the negative sides of things and the things are hard to cope with about humanity. But then to come back again in that last stanza, my soul cries out, and to finally release and finally cry and have that breakdown and not understand, why the world seems so hard and why people can't be nice to each other. Finally, that flood of emotional relief, the vessel filled with pain. I really appreciate the piece that well done. I thought it was pretty quick, kind of welling up with unspent tears. So I really enjoyed the piece, so thank you, Stephen. Viviana, what did you think?
Yeah, I loved it, and you had great comments about it. I loved the crack clay jar imagery. That metaphor worked really well. And like you, I loved the muddy, melancholy misfit. That's such a good use of alliteration. And I've always liked misfit. One of my favorite songs right now is Misfit Toys. Something about melancholy misfit is great, and to have that muddy added to it is really nice. And then you see more alliteration in hardened human hearts, and disruptive demons destroying. He really works well with the alliteration. When it talks about too much pain being the only thing that's real, I thought about how I was in a lot of pain for a long time because of my brain tumor. But the thing is, it happened so gradually that it escalated that I always had a headache, and I didn't even fully realize that that's, not what normal felt like. Pain was just how it was. And then when I got better, I felt like I died because I couldn't feel. I'm like, I can't feel my head anymore. Because you're not supposed to. You're not supposed to constantly be aware of, all of your veins in your head because they're just throbbing and painful. That's not how it is. You're not supposed to feel that pain. But I was just like, I didn't feel alive without it, because that's just how I was. And that's just what came to mind when it says too much pain, the only thing real, the only thing we can truly call our own, because I felt like that. I felt like when you took away my pain, I'm like, am I even here? So I connected with that. The ending just warmed my, I wanted to hug him at the end there. When simple acts of kindness would kill all the blindness. So his soul is crying out, and he has tears, and he's feeling like, how dare I just be here crying? Why would a grown man cry when simple act of kindness would kill all this blindness? So, step away from this crying and do something to try to make it better. But, I just wanted to hug him throughout that whole stanza. And the ending line, especially the idea that if we all just do a little bit of kindness, just try to spread something positive, then we can diminish this blindness that is causing so much pain. It's a beautiful poem.
Yeah, agreed. It's that last stanza really kind of, it's hard not to be empathetic and want to comfort the narrator. Great piece, Stephen. Thank you for the writing. What do we have going on now?
I just realized I mixed up the order because I was thinking that my comment on Incubus said prompt 3, but actually that's written above, meaning Daniel DeShino was supposed to be prompt 3 and Incubus was prompt 5. So I read that at the wrong time. But in any case, I'm backtracking to Daniel DeShino, who should have been earlier, and I said the wrong prompt. So I apologize for mislabeling. Incubus was actually prompt 5. And now back to prompt 3. I'm going to read Daniel DeShino's. Cracking Pavement. It's not being a broken man that bothers me anymore. As the prisoner of war after years, feels a strange comfort. It's the fact that I don't remember when I wasn't. Silence and calm just seem to release the noise in my head. Happiness, just a weird prelude to chaos, like the calm before storm. Photo albums from childhood with no chapter of childhood's end bring confusion of my timeline. There was no hurricane or earthquake, nor tornado or avalanche, just a steady rain that slowly cracks the roads that I travel. The cement so strongly paved that does not provide smooth travel as it used to. I've tried to pave it over, but it just cracks again. I think I've decided to award the weathering of the road I travel a win, and the cracks birth crevices, and it's all gone. I'll see what grows. A forest in my dreams. End poem.
Lovely read, Faziana. I found this really interesting, the development of the metaphor. You know, cause it doesn't really start out with that. It starts out with the background, you know. It's not being a broken man that bothers me anymore. It's the fact I don't remember what I wasn't. You know, the idea that it's something that you've dealt with for so long, or maybe even your entire life, that, you know, the change is imperceptible, which I really kind of liked that as a concept, you know, because it's not for everyone that there's, like, this sudden onset of mental illness. It was like, I was totally fine, and then I broke, you know. Sometimes it's more subtly than that. So I liked that as an intro. I really loved happiness, just a weird prelude to chaos, like the calm before a storm. For me, as someone who struggles with bipolar, so true. When I'm in a mania, I enjoy it. Like, I'm so happy. I'm so exuberantly over the moon, and every little thing makes me happy. You know, just the flowers in a ditch will set me off for hours, or hearing the right song and can just really set my mood, and I'm alive, and I'm barely sleeping, and I'm drinking up, like, my entire world around me. But then there's this little bit in the back of my head going, you know where it goes from here. You know, this is the higher you feel, like, the farther you fall. And then it's coming. Like, it's coming. You're going to have to pay for all of this. Like, every bit of joy that you're getting out of life right now is going to come with consequences. And you don't know when it's going to hit, and it's going to hit like a hammer, and you know it because you've been through the cycle over and over again. For me, that line was so relatable. You know, happiness is just a weird prelude to chaos, like the calm before a storm. Because really, I do. I sit there and count the days. Like, I've been manic now for 14 days. I've been manic for 21 days. And I'm just thinking, oh, God, you know, how bad is this going to be? Which doesn't help. It just adds to the nice little anxiety. So I just really enjoyed those three lines because made me feel less alone. If that makes sense, I really related to them. And just, you know, photo albums from childhood with no chapter of childhood's end, you know, just never really growing up, just kind of cataloging, like, an endless kind of state of youth. But still, again, you know, there was no hurricane, no earthquake, no tornado. There was no, like, big break. It was just a slow development or traipse into the breakdown. So I thought that was really interesting. And then we're introduced to the metaphor, the cement, you know, that has crumbled and worn and now has crevices and cracks that you're falling into it. And at the very end, I'll see what grows, a forest in my dream. It makes me think of, you know, all the things that grow in broken sidewalks, all those daisies and flowers and weeds, and all of the beauty that can come from broken pavement. You know, it's not all bad. And knowing that this is a mental state and this is a state of mind, the idea of forest in my dreams, I think really just adds a sense of beauty to it. Reminding you that, hey, I'm talking about my mental state, my mental health, and that as I fall apart, it doesn't have to all be bad. So I really liked it. I thought this was a beautiful break from Daniel, and I really liked the kind of tie-in of that metaphor at the end. I think it was well done. So thank you. What did you think of Phasiana?
I loved it, and I like what you said about how it made you feel like you're not alone, because that's one of the wonderful things about poetry and about poetry about dark and tough subjects. You know, writing about mental illness may sound macabre to some people, but it helps us connect. It helps people who suffer from it see that they're not alone. It helps them see that there is hope, you know, because at the end of this, he goes a positive way. And sometimes if you're still in the depths of the darkness, seeing someone else talk about how they went through a hard time and they're getting better can give you hope. And people who haven't experienced it can create empathy, which leads to those little moments of kindness like Stephen was talking about at the end of his poem. So I think that's a wonderful thing about poetry is that we can make those connections. I liked in his first stanza when he talked about I don't remember when I wasn't, because it's one of those things that does happen gradually, or it maybe it's always been the case. It captures you. It's not necessarily a one traumatic event, and I think he brought that so well with the storm metaphors. No hurricane or earthquake or tornado or avalanche. It wasn't one thing that buried him or took him away. It was the rain, that steady attack of little things. And sometimes it's all those small things that do add up that put those cracks in you, and you erode your mental state can erode with all of the small pressures, especially if they're constant. You don't get that break from the rain. You don't get time to heal. It's just constant. So I thought that steady rain metaphor worked so nicely. And just recognizing that the road is not so smooth as it used to be. It feels like it's bumpy and cracked, and life just doesn't go as smoothly as it could have. Maybe your thoughts don't come as smoothly. Maybe your feelings are more of a roller coaster with all those potholes. But it's I don't know. I just thought that was a wonderful metaphor. Then the end, where it talks about the good things that can come out of those broken bits. Sometimes something grows in you, and maybe it's something like the fact that now he's artistic and writing poems, and I believe he's a songwriter or musician. It just creates something beautiful out of the pain. And that often happens. I mean, usually, I think artists stereotypically are kind of tortured, and the beauty comes out of their pain. Now, there are exceptions to that, of course, but I think it's quite common that people turn their pain into art, and that can be that beautiful flower that grows out of the pavement to have the weeds that come out in places that used to be, I keep saying paved over and over again. There's no other way to say it. There was this picture that I saw a while ago of, it's a truck, like a probably like a 1940s truck in I guess on a highway, but it's all grown over, and it's like it's covered in moss, and there are things growing out of it, and there are animals living around it, and it's beautiful in the way that, like, nature has reclaimed this spot. And that's kind of what I picture here, where maybe his childhood that he says earlier, there was no chapter where childhood clearly ended. Maybe that inner child has managed to escape the pavement and his creativity will grow. I just thought it was a beautiful ending. And it's so structured in the beginning, and then at the end, it's more spaced out until each line is its own separate thing. And I think that that's an intentional thing to show that the cracks are now leaving bigger spaces. It's beautiful.
I think you're right about the structure. You know, how it kind of falls apart, I think, is kind of a nod to the crumbling of the pavement, how it just is losing its structure, you know, or it looks really rigid and kind of formatted, not super rigid, but, you know, there's clear stanzas and that solid, you know, feel to the stanzas, and then it just kind of crumbles a bit, which I think is, you know, working in line with the metaphor. But I think that does a really good job at that. I don't know why, but your truck imagery kind of reminded me of something that I thought of on a hike. Sometimes I go on hikes and I just kind of think to myself and let myself explore my thoughts. Like, I have conversations with myself in my head. And I saw this bridge, the old bridge that used to cross the creek that had kind of, like, crumbled and fallen apart and was covered with moss and ferns and had, like, trees growing out of it. And it was really gorgeous, you know, and I thought, like, you know, is it useful? You know, I don't, because my brain kind of went to this thing where it was like, oh, it's really pretty, and it's a shame that so many things that are really beautiful just aren't useful. And then I had this conversation in my head, well, like, isn't it useful? Like, I just appreciated it, and I just had a moment of thinking of how beautiful it was and stopping and thinking about it. You know, so many times I think artistic pursuits and beauty aren't considered useful by modern society, but aren't they? Because you need those mental breaks. Like, you need those moments of appreciating the things around you, or you can't function. It's just a very different kind of use that can't be, like, directly monetized. So society doesn't quite see it the same, but it's a different kind of use. I don't know, just your thought about the truck just made me think about that weird hiking conversation I had with myself. These are the weird things Brooke thinks about on long hikes.
I love that. That's one of the beautiful things about hikes. I think so much clearer when I'm out in nature, partly because I'm really sensitive to noise, and so, like, all the electronics hum in a way that, like, just fries me. So when you're out in nature, you can actually, like, hear your thoughts. I don't know. I really like that you do that, that you reflect on things and that you look at it. And really, like, a fallen tree from a human perspective is like, oh, well, that's a waste. But no, a fallen tree has more life in it than a standing living tree. There are so many animals and bugs and, like, a fallen tree has so much life in it. And I had kind of forgotten about that for a while, even though I remember reading about it and studying, like, all the stuff that can be in a tree. And I went to sit on this log once, and my nephew went, no, there are creatures who live there. And it was so sweet because he was horrified. He must have, like, saw some kind of documentary thing like I had. He's 5, though, and at the time he was 4. And he was like, Auntie, there are creatures who need that log. And it was just like, he was so defensive of it. It was adorable. I just loved it. And so there are often purposes to things that we don't make the connection about. And art is one of those things where it can really mean something to someone. Sometimes seeing that could change something. I mean, my doctor's office has the most beautiful art. He's from South Africa, and so a lot of his his art is definitely African influenced. But, I mean, I have a lot of anxiety about going to the doctor's office, and I just focus on the art. I, like, can't even, like, feel the needles or whatever they're doing because I'm just like, I'm just going to focus on that zebra. I'm going to look at the stripes on that zebra. How many stripes does that zebra have? Look at it. You just, like, totally focus on the art. And, you know, there are different kinds of art and different appreciations of it, but I – even just as a distraction can make a big difference. So anyway, I forget my point of that. Wonderful poem by Daniel.
I do find it a little bit funny that here we are reading a piece by Daniel that isn't necessarily so much about nature as some of his other pieces, and yet we find ourselves exploring nature anyway. I guess it's just kind of an intrinsic piece of Daniel's writing.
It is. He has that effect on us.
Anyway, I really enjoyed the write, so thank you, Daniel. What do we have up now?
We have one by Diane D., and I believe it's your turn to read.
Absolutely. This is Mental Breakdown by Diane D. The cigarette smoke curled and then swirled into coils, disappeared along with an idling will to live and the daylight that she leaned on. Dingy lights teased the shadows, crawling up walls, blurring her eyes, screams in her head calling a name, screams from outside answering. She removed her heel savagely to squash spiders. She scratched brutal and fossil skin and shrunk into a clenched ball, insanity mixed within her tears, creating room to breathe in between. She hugged tightly her shaking body. Her sobs shook her recoiled core. Her shuddering shoulders settled, holding on to herself as if dissolving. She felt herself melting into the floor. What absorbed her had vanished. A hush fell over her raw collapse, broken. She had to fall to get up again. She lit a cigarette, blew a smoke ring, replaced her heel, and grew up. End poem. Oh, I found this really fascinating. It sounds weird, but there's something almost sexy about the way that this feels to read this poem. It's very feminine and alluring in its use of language, which I really like. To start with the cigarette smoke curling and swirling is such a nice visual. But then the idea that it's disappearing with the idling will to live, like the way that the smoke just kind of fades, it's parallel to a mental state. I thought it was a really interesting way to open this, you know, and then to pull you into the scenery of, like, dingy lights, and just screaming inside her head, you know, and hearing the screams also on the outside and smashing spiders that don't exist and picking at her skin, just, like, going momentarily absolutely insane, you know, breaking down and crying, dissolving. I really loved the, you know, her shuddering shoulder settled, holding onto herself as if dissolving, felt herself melting into the floor. I've had those really hard cries. I don't cry a lot. I really don't. I don't remember really the last time that I cried. It's been months and months. But when I do cry, it is like a full-body deal. And I am so tired and so wiped afterwards that I just kind of sleep. Like, I usually take, like, a really hard sleep immediately after. And it kind of makes me think of that, like, that whole body, whole soul kind of cry that almost is just a major release. And then to get up again, you know, and to relight the cigarette as, like, almost reigniting the will to live. And then that last line, replaced her heels and grew up. There's some real undertones to that. You know, like how people say, like, oh, put your big girl panties on or man up or, you know, like, almost like having emotions and feelings is unacceptable. you know, you're being a child for having this emotional outburst, grow the F up, you know, and it's just, it's really not the case, but that's how society can really make you feel. You know, so there's almost like a bitterness to it, you know, to put your heels back on and grow up, like you're just going to get over having feelings. Not how people work, turns out. But I like the bit of bitterness that it really puts into it, you know. I liked it. It really painted a visual, and it really, I think, took it from, like, a full cycle, you know, from the fading cigarette smoke to the stages of this breakdown to getting up and quote-unquote getting your shit together and relighting the cigarette, you know, just this momentary loss of sanitary, this momentary falling apart. I really liked it. I thought it was well written. Like I said, there is something almost kind of noir feeling about it in a way, with the use of language, which I find really interesting. There's, to me at least, an almost kind of sexual or sensual undertone to it, with the cigarette smoke curling, you know, and the dingy light, the crawling walls, and the heels, and that, you know, just kind of curling into this mattress. I really enjoyed it. I felt like it was a really great write. So, thank you, Diane. What did you think of these, Diana?
I really liked it. The smoke part at the beginning, when it swirls into coils, disappeared along with the idling will to live. And that just, like, I'm picturing the smoke going off into wisps and kind of fading away, and imagining her watching this smoke and feeling like her will just drain and thinking of it as the smoke. It's just such a vivid image, and you can feel it. Like, I feel that in my chest when I read it. It's just, it hits me. And I don't smoke, and I actually really don't like smoking, but it works so nicely as a metaphor. And then the daylight that she leaned on is also a really strong line. That she leaned on, she depended on that. She was, you know, hanging on to it, and it was just barely holding her up, and then it went away. And sometimes you're clinging to just one last thing, and that little thing gets knocked out, and you're gone. So I feel like daylight could be a metaphor for many things there. I liked the way that it talked about the squashing the spiders that aren't there. Spiders, for some reason, are like a very common hallucination. If you are high, if you have a really bad fever, if you are, I don't know, delusional in any way, spiders are like one of the most common things. And I think part of it is because you get those little floaters in your vision, and they could easily be mistaken for bugs. there was this one time when I was on new seizure medication that did not agree with me. I had this hallucination about a spider who was doing sign language with all of its legs, and I was overwhelmed because I couldn't look at all the symbols at the same time, and I'm like, just use two of your legs.
That's the problem.
I was so mad at it. And my husband was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, the spider is talking too fast. And he was just like, what? I have never lived that down, and I won't because I keep bringing it up, but it's just funny. But the idea of trying to squash those spiders, I think can also work on a symbolic level of, you know, there are all these problems that you imagine. Sometimes those things that we are anxious about are not actually there. Sometimes when we think everyone is out to get us, they're not really. So she's squashing spiders that aren't there. And I think that might mean she's squashing problems that weren't there to start with. But, you know, you go around squashing invisible spiders, people start treating you differently. And same if you're squashing problems that aren't really there. The scratching of the skin, again, something that when you're not well mentally or if you're high, it becomes a thing. Again, I just am remembering my own issues because my skin is very pale and you can see everything underneath it. And, man, I would just go nuts on my skin. The shrunk into a clenched ball. She uses such good wording to remind you that when you have a mental illness, you don't just feel it mentally. You have symptoms all over your body. Even depression, you get the headaches and the muscle tension, and like there's so much that you physically feel. Like not only is it something that is mentally affecting you, it's a physical problem, and I don't just mean the chemistry in your brain. I mean like you feel it all over, and I feel like this connects you to the physical reaction that comes with mental illness or with having a breakdown, because like you said, when you have those kind of crying episodes, and I don't mean you specifically, I mean like people, you feel that, like it, like I actually get like sore chest muscles from like the heaving, your throat hurts, like your face hurts, there's like this like, I don't even know how to explain that feeling underneath your eyes, that it's not actually, like, on the surface. It's, like, in your sinuses, that, like, deep, painful ache that is specific to crying. And it's just, there's more to it than just a little bit of water that comes out of your eye. And it's the same with so much else, where it has bigger effects. And I think that she brought that to life. And yeah, lighting the cigarette in this case feels like hope. And I mean, since smoking is not a super healthy habit, normally I would not think of cigarette as like, I'm going to live. But in this case, it does. It feels like, like a choice to keep going. And blowing that smoke ring to show that she still has like an impact, it feels like, you know, she's, you can still see it. It hasn't faded away. And then the grew up part, I think, works on multiple levels in a fun way because you know, we put on your heels, you get taller. But also the growing up and then getting herself together. So for some reason that made me giggle at the end because she grew up by putting the heels on. literally. I thought that was a cute ending that had hope in it. So very, very good poem. I feel like I could talk about it for a long time, partly because I get sidetracked in my own memories. But again, she's sparking things that make us feel like we're not alone, and that's what you want to see in a poem.
Yeah, I mean, kind of feeding a little bit off your tangent, going on my own little tangent, I've only had one hallucination ever. I had meningitis, cryptococcal meningitis when I was about 9 years old. Very scary. Don't recommend. But I remember, like, in one of my last few moments that I remember before I just basically went unconscious for a long period of time, which I'm sitting here and just now realizing that that's basically a coma, but for some reason it never occurred to me before to say that I was in a coma because no one actually said that to me. But anyway, I hallucinated that there were cats in my bedroom, and I like called my mom in and was yelling at her to get like the cats out of my room, and there were no cats in my room, but I swear to God I could see them like they were so real, you know. And it's still weird to me today to like to reconcile the fact that like that didn't happen, that was a result of like swelling in my brain and not actual cats in my room, because they were so real to me. knowing that they're not, like, knowing that they're not on a rational level and parsing that with the fact that, like, I experienced it is wild. Just, you know, an interesting thought. On the topic of spiders, I always assumed that spiders were one of the top hallucinations because so many times when a spider is on you, you don't really see it, you just feel it. You know, like that little tickling, like a nerve ending, kind of just, you know, something you don't see frequently in reality when it is there. So that when you feel a sensation and nothing's there, it's easy to think it's a spider. Something I've always thought might have accounted for some of those. But it's funny to hear your story about the sign language spider. I love that. Thanks for sharing. And I really enjoyed the piece from Diane. I love words that get my mind working and going in strange directions. So, wonderful write. What do we have up now?
I think you should read us yours.
I said okay and then realized I was on mute. Not going to be very effective. This is Slow Cry. The way the droplets tumble down, winding their way into cracks, looks like kissing to me, a grieving tongue searching for comfort in the crevices of the earth, hungry for a cradle. My monsoon poured down a shower drain during a midsummer drought when I found you on shuffle, full lips pressed against my eardrums, letting me take it slow, everything slow, even if it rains forever, forever someday ends. Shower in it. Damp and downpour, when everything is dressed blue and gray, tango, rainstorm across a ballroom kissed by sky. A voice from half a world away, whispering, it's going to be all right, all right. Just take it slow.
Oh, I like that. I like the way that you describe the droplets. And I can picture them in the cracks. To say that they look like kissing is so interesting and sweet. But then a grieving tongue searching for comfort adds a whole other level to that. You know, grieving is oddly quite linked to sensuality. People at funerals tend to hook up because there's that urge to feel alive. There's that urge to feel something other than the pain. So that comes to mind when I see a grieving tongue. My monsoon poured down a shower drain. I really like that because that just shows, like, for you to have a monsoon, that is a big storm, and that is a lot of tears in a slow cry. And showers seem to be that place where people do have big emotional reactions. And this is partly because it's that private place where you can just be away and you have, like, the ability to not have people look at you or hear you. And because you have the water coming over you, it's not as noticeable that you cried. But it's just... there's something about showers. I tend to have panic attacks before or during a shower. I don't know what that is. But the idea that your monsoon poured down the shower drain really puts that image in my mind of someone who's just struggling emotionally and hunkers down in that shower. And then to have you discover the music, the way that you say it, full lips pressed against my eardrums. So you have those headphones in, and it's just... it feels like you're connected to the singer. I love that. Where is it? Oh, yeah. When I found you on shuffle. So amazing how sometimes when you're just shuffling through some music, you can discover a song that just hits you in the heart, and that's exactly what you needed in that moment. You find that connection. And it can be very cathartic to hear someone who's feeling your pain or to have a whole other feeling because they bring you into it. a voice from half a world away whispering it's going to be all right, just take it slow. And having someone say that in a song at the moment where you need to hear it can have such an impact. I really love this, right?
Thank you. Yeah. I don't really know what to say about it. I was going through a moment, and that's basically what happened. You know, I was having a really rough time, and just listening to some random music, and just, like, the perfect song came on. To just really, you know, how I'm feeling, but in a supportive way. You know, just a little shower breakdown.
Been there many times.
I get what you're saying about the anxiety about showering. It's one of the things I really struggle with. Oddly, also in my anxiety and mental health, is I know that I'm gonna feel better after the shower. Like, I know that, but it's hard for me to get there when I'm in that particular mind state. Because I don't know, it almost feels like a before and after. It's almost like a cutting off the now. I don't know why it feels like a reset in a way, a lot more than going to bed and waking up in the morning. It's I don't know, I get weird about it. Like, I know I'm gonna feel better when I do it, but it's really hard for me to make myself go do it.
Me too. Yeah. There's this like this barrier. Or there's some times where I want to shower like 1,000 times a day, and there are other times where I like just can't bring myself to go in there. Part of it's because sometimes I have sensory things where I don't want the water to touch me or I don't like the noise of it. But mostly it's just like I think the shower is a place where you think, or at least I, like, it's that kind of empty time where you can't, like, be staring at your phone or a TV or, like, you know, having other kinds of input that distract you. You're stuck with your thoughts. Although maybe music helped you out of that, as you see in your poem. I just tend to panic in quiet moments. So, but also don't like loud noises because I don't, you know, there's no pleasing me. So there's something about showers. I'm like, don't be loud, but also don't be quiet. I'm like a cat in that way. It's like, pay attention to me, but don't touch me. But don't put it. Like, I'm just going to be here.
There's a dog with a ball that says, like, you know, play fetch, and then you go take the ball from him, and he's like, no take, only throw. Like, we can't throw it. No take, only throw.
Yep. All right,
sorry,
I'm
guilty.
This next poem is by Gerald E. Green, and it's called If Only I Cared Enough. I've never walked the crumbling road or seen the valleys of anxiety, never felt the trauma of defeat debilitating with its emptiness. They say the bottom, stripped of dignity, demands more than you have, not caring of the consequence of who's destroyed by happenstance. Only those with passion reach that place. Those who try and fail. Some strive for happiness with modern drugs, while others follow paths to wealth. A special track reserved for worshippers of fame requires more, demanding all reserves, sucking and destroying all within its sphere. Beyond this valley is a hill, I hear, that reaches to the sky, releasing pleasure and endorphins, making life more than it is. Those who go there are committed, changed by raw survival. Tempered steel, withstanding new assaults, prepared to leave the milling crowd. I watch them, knowing I'll not follow, see them in their ups and downs. Some have died along the way, but those with anger rise another day. End poem.
Great read of Faziana. I like how this kind of starts out with it, like an admission of lack of experience. You know, I've never walked the crumbling road or seen the valleys of anxiety. You know, just these aren't things that I've really experienced, you know, but I understand that other people do, you know, kind of thing. And that, you know, having some grasp or, you know, understanding on some level that these are things that happen, you know, and that there's almost a bit of envy when you get to the third stanza. You know, only those with passion reach that place, those who try and fail. You know, again, kind of with the concept of, like, the higher you climb, the farther you can fall. You know, when I was a high schooler, I was very pessimistic, because I, you know, didn't expect a lot from life because things were always letting me down. You know, had a pretty difficult youth. And so I remember, you know, saying to people, you know, if I don't have any expectations, then I won't be disappointed. You know, it's kind of bitter outlook on life. But it was, you know, self-defense mechanism. But it kind of, you know, reminds me of that because it's like if you... But you're also not attempting anything. You're not throwing yourself behind anything wholeheartedly or really trying to achieve anything. You know, and so many high and greatly positive emotions are tied to those deeply negative emotions because you can't really grieve anything if you didn't love it to begin with. So I really kind of like that. I like how empathetic, you know, that this is. And, you know, it's a special, you know, some strive for happiness with modern drugs, the idea of pill popping, you know, and then, to try to balance things, which I think is, you know, maybe a little naive. It even kind of reads as maybe a little callous, the lack of understanding. It's not really, you don't become happy by taking antidepressants. Like, that's not how it works. It's more like neutral. It resets your middle. You know, I have kind of a love-hate relationship with pills in general. You know, there kind of becomes like a bitterness to it, like a viewing people's strive for achievements and not necessarily a really positive light. You know, worshippers of fame leading to what makes people depressed. You know, to think that you're learning by watching. You know, I watch them knowing I'll not follow, seeing them in their ups and downs. Some have died along the way, but those with anger rise another day. There's kind of, it starts out really empathetic. It starts out with some level of understanding, like, these are things I haven't experienced. Then it almost reads as a bit only viewing the negative side of experience. Like, it feels very jaded without actually having experienced it. I don't know how to word it, but people who have anxiety, people who have experienced trauma, people who feel debilitated by emptiness, you know, it's not all because of drugs or wealth or this bizarre pursuit of fame, you know, it can just as easily be like just not being happy all of a sudden and not really having a reason why. You know, or maybe the trauma has nothing to do with something you tried to do. You know, it can be something that just very, that happens to you that's outside of your control. You know, a death, an assault, an accident, a health condition. You know, there are so many different ways to get there that can really push you down the path without, you know, all the downs and none of the ups, just so to speak. But I don't know. I have a hard time relating to this one only because there's an attempt to understand and then kind of like a shunning of understanding. I don't know. I struggle with this piece and not feeling, I have a hard time relating. Like, it makes me want to have a conversation with the author about it, going, you know, like, explain to me more on where you're coming from. You know, it makes me want to relate on a human level to, with the person directly to have a better understanding of their mindset. Not that this is necessarily their mindset. You know, I understand that poems are not facts and not necessarily even opinions. You know, there are fictional runs. But I just read, you know, I watch The Knowing I'll Not Follow. Like, every mental illness is a result of drug abuse. You know? Which is just not the case. I don't know. I find it interesting. Like I said, it makes me want to pick the author's brain. But it also, to me, speaks of a different and its own kind of anxiety, like a fear of failure and a fear of experience and a fear of trying. You're so afraid of failing that you never tried. And that all attempts appear in this kind of jaded, negative mindset. I don't know. That's my interpretation. What did you think of Aviana?
I agree with you. I struggled as well because it does seem to kind of put the blame on the person who's struggling for trying too hard, for reaching too far. I don't necessarily think that that's how it was intended. I think that that's it's something that I saw too, but I think more it was coming from the point of being afraid to try, like you were saying at the end there, that it's the idea that if you don't climb high, you can't fall down as far. So I agree with you that I don't think that it is usually, if it's a true mental illness, the result of trying too hard or of doing drugs. Usually, actually, people become addicted because they're trying to fill a hole that often they have mental illness to start with that results in it. But I think this is it's intelligently worded. It's put together with style, it's not fully what I would expect from this contest, but I can respect the way that it's put together. Now, I think we have just enough time.
Go ahead.
I think we have just... our timing. there's one by Jasker Ann that was actually left over from last week, and it was about the pressure and the difficulty of survival. I'll read the AN before I play it. It says, cancer knows no religion. It's fatal, but you don't dare give up without giving a fight. You never know how strong you are until being strong is the only choice that you have. All right, so we're going to play the audio.
Be survival. Be fresh, young bamboo, yawned crazy swimming sand, thousand fear exploding in my quad cage. Attempting desperately to scribble, telegraphing of conscious against the sky, the moon sees it. My hands are numb, but I want to caress a white summer cloud looming over endless shores, my breath overflows. It tickles me pink. My eyes are filled, but I want to perceive a monsoon wedding, all the rain and glistening leaves, the bride adorning a necklace of drops of diamonds, revealing the secrets of silent woods, the misty haze, dew casting white shadows. My feet are bowed, but I want to gun past the crisp wind, across the fences, torn by berries, into an abyss, where tiny golden stars are found, heaven keeps the earth. Then we have no space for birds now, a mockingbird calls as a pride pass, hearing the roaring of the crowd as I scroll to the ground. Life is a song, we have classified Riddhi Song Lal. In the midst of dark, that is where written music only my people heart can hear. Thank you.
I really enjoyed this piece with all the different sensations that are covered in this. You know, the saying, you know, I have these struggles, you know, my hands are numb, my eyes are swiveled, my feet are warped, but still all of the experiences that you want to have, the way you want to live. And I was particularly struck by that third stanza. My eyes are swiveled, but I want to perceive a monsoon wedding of the rain and glistening leaves, the bride adorning a necklace of drops of diamonds, revealing the secrets of silent woods with misty haze dew casting white shadows. Sir, I don't care how swiveled your eyes are, that is a beautiful way to perceive the world. And I think it would benefit greatly if more people had that type of vision. I really loved it. I thought it was absolutely gorgeous. Just all of the imagery in here, you know, just the way you want to see things and feel things and experience things, and not be hindered by, you know, a physical state. It's a beautiful piece. I loved it. Thank you so much for writing it. What did you think of Tiziana?
I feel like this is like a beautiful testament to how people can feel, people who can't see can sometimes see more. People who are, you know, missing some kind of experience because of their limitations can appreciate what they have even more, can recognize how beautiful things can be. If someone is knowing that they're going to lose their vision, they will take in every sunrise and see as much as they can. They will feel whatever they can to recognize that you have something like your hands are numb. You want to feel everything. I mean, I know that from experience. My left side was numb for probably about a year. Then when I could feel again, I was like obsessed with like touching everything, every fabric, everything. Just wanted to like feel the textures. I still have this thing where I like realize that I'm touching everything inappropriately because I'm just like, I just want to like know what this feels like. I say inappropriate. I just mean like my hand, but you know. I think that he brings this to life, that need for experiencing things and for recognizing things. And like you said, that I wish the more people could see the beauty and like the way that the rain and the drops of diamonds, like such beautiful imagery there. Lungs have no space for words now. There's something that's like when you're just barely trying to breathe and you want to be able to speak and it's you're drowned out by it. This is just beautiful and heartbreaking, and I love it. Thank you for sharing, Jas Karan. We are now out of time. I think there is one carryover. So, Peter, we will get to you next week. Sorry about that. I do tend to talk a lot. Thank you so much to everybody who wrote and contributed to Babbler's contest. Thank you, Babbler, for being amazing and inspiring us with these quotes. And thank you, Fill My Eyes, for giving us this show that we can share poetry and talk about it. Thank you so much, everyone, and good night. We'll see you next week.
Good night, everyone.